Dunkin' Cold Coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. With blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar, discover legendary taste with America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We're back. It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Raw. How you doing, Raw?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I am not here.
I'm my God.
Who am I talking to? You are talking to a past version of me that's in America, but the current me is in swinging London with
you
his family.
What, mate?
By the way, every time I think of London in my head, you wouldn't be surprised at all at how many Austin Powers quotes go in my head, but like every time I say London, I think of Basil Exposition saying, "At the Electric Pussycat Swingers Club here in swinging London." And so that's how I always think of London. And I haven't been since 1997.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm very excited. Like, because I mean, England, the cool thing about Europe is, you know, you go to Europe and everything there is just so much fucking older than it is here, right? Like, you're like, oh, that church, yeah, that was built in 1215. You're like, holy fuck.
Right. Yeah, it's like impossible to imagine the lives of the people that did that. Whereas most things in the United States, you're kind of like, that guy probably like was susceptible to diseases that I'm not susceptible to, but like would have had just as bad an experience seeking healthcare as I would have.
Right. But like London, you know, in 2024, it's probably a great deal larger and busier than it was in 1997. I'm gonna go out on a limb there and say that.
What is bringing you back? Are you doing the you're doing the slow horses walking tour?
No, spring.
A smelly guy who farts.
No, spring break.
That's awesome.
And you know, we did a tropical spring break, which was kind of all right. But the last time we went away as a family was to Paris, and that was easily the best trip we had taken, like as a family. And they wanted to do Europe again. And then by the time I had gotten my shit together and gone through all the Expedia options and all that stuff, like all the other options were too expensive. And so I could only get to London. I couldn't get there direct. And we have to fly
famously
back.
Famously affordable London, England.
No. But like,
no,
you know,
I mean,
like
I know what you're saying. It's easier than like trying to put some shit together in Spain or whatever. It's like a big city. You can take cabs everywhere.
Well, also like the other thing is like when you are, you know, when you're doing business travel for yourself, it's really quite easy to book stuff. When you have five people, it's a bear, particularly with hotels. Cause you know, if you say like, we can't even do hotels, we have to do Airbnbs.
Yeah.
Because if you say you have five people for a hotel room, Expedia is just like, go fuck yourself.
Right. So. Or you're getting like three rooms at a hotel or something like that, which is you've blown an annual budget.
Yeah. And then there, it's like, yeah. Oh, okay, well, do I have, or, you know, should we get two rooms? And then like, well, they have the special secret door that like connects them. And can I have that? And like, I haven't dealt with any of that shit. We just Airbnb out every time we go. But I do have to tell you that, you know, like once in a while we reference like the summer of Drew, like when I was single and living in a studio apartment in New York. Like that Drew was like a perfect gentleman compared to like semester abroad Drew in England. I was like,
rampaging through
an absolute fucking apex, fucking drunk ass predator weirdo.
So as a collector of rare Drew stories, like obviously I feel like New York City Drew probably comes in for unnecessarily rough treatment for me. Like I talk about your George Foreman grill a lot. I shouldn't do that.
I had a gross Foreman grill too. I'm not like mad.
Oh, I didn't think you were mad. It's about fairness.
No,
it's
it was bachelor. I enjoyed my life back then.
But the versions of Drew of your European experience where you're just sort of like, we would go to like this club and like everyone would barf and the name of the club was Baked Potato and it was American themed. And it's all just like completely nonsensical 90s shit. I guess that is making sense. So 97 is your, that's junior year abroad.
Junior year abroad. I was at Oxford.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
It was like, well, also I think the program was a little bit of a boondoggle. Like it was like it was not a, I don't, it was
not
somehow
like a semester at C grade boondoggle, but a boondoggle all the same.
I'll put you this way. Like we were not residing at Oxford. Like Oxford, the university is, if you're familiar with, oh my God, I've already talked myself into
preposterous
shit. Like,
not in Boston, but near Boston.
If you're familiar with universities like Yale here in America, they are broken up into what are called colleges. So each, there's like, it's, and it, I don't mean like the College of Science or whatever. It's just like every dorm is called a college and has its own quad, blah, 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 blah. And that's based off of Oxford. We weren't in any of the colleges in Oxford. We were just in some shitty flat. And then I would meet with, we would have tutorials with the Oxford teachers, but we weren't in a classroom. It was just one-on-one tutoring. So I don't know how like on the up and up it was, but I believe I put it on my fucking resume. And like, it was also like, I learned a lot. Like that was where I read Ulysses. It was where I lost my virginity, not to the teacher who taught me Ulysses, but
wow. It's a little too Martin Amis, that one.
Yeah.
I like the idea that you're going back, like Night the Lights Went Out style, to figure out if you were scammed on your semester abroad. Like you're just going to re-report it and try to figure out if any of this is real.
It's not that big of a, it doesn't nag at me, because first of all, it wasn't my money. It was mom and dad's money.
Secondly, right, get their asses.
Secondly, I had a great time. Like I remember one night, I bought a entire bottle of Jameson that was shrink wrapped with like a pint of fucking nothing, not like a good beer, like a fucking, like a Carling or something.
You got like
something
a combo
shitty.
Pack?
Yeah. Like it was like a combo pack. And I drank all the Jameson.
Good man.
And like I said to one of the guys I was living in my flat with, I was like, we gotta watch Caddyshack. And we put on Caddyshack. And like, I've seen that movie 4 million times. I never need to see it again. And then like an hour through Caddyshack, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna take my dick out and go into the street. And my friend's like, no. And I'm like, I'm doing it. And he's like, and he's like actively preventing me from reaching down to my fly.
Now I understand that this is not maybe a question that you would have been equipped to answer then or now, but what was the game plan there?
There's nothing.
All right, it wasn't the sort of thing where you're like, I'm gonna take my dick out and we go to the street and I'm gonna sort some shit out with the neighbors or whatever. This was,
you know, what was funny was one time I had a meeting with my Joyce teacher, and I go to sit down with him, and he's his leg is in a cast. And I, you know, he had been healthy before that. And I was like, hey, what happened? He goes, I got pissed. And he like, he was drunk. He like fell off a wall, like, like a village idiot. Like, he like got drunk and like, and it was great. It was a very good drunken time. I did not behave myself, but I worked out a lot, and like, I ran on the, like the Iffley Road track, where I'm pretty sure Roger Bannister set the mile record back in the day.
Oh, wow.
Like he broke the 4 minute mile, and like it was just open to anybody who wanted to use it, except you had to pay like, I don't know, $15 for a gym fee or whatever the fuck. But I ran like a motherfucker, and then I ate lots of, like, it was the only time I ate a sandwich that had mayo on it that I liked. It was from Morton's, and it was a curry chicken salad sandwich. And I would get one every day.
Weirdly, I have good sandwich memories from England, too. And I don't think of it as, I mean, beyond the cliche of it being like a bad food culture or whatever.
That's
like,
all
I'm sure,
bullshit, by the way.
I think
it's like,
not
it's
totally
London.
Bullshit. Yeah. Like, but like London is like a major world city. Like there's incredible restaurants there, I'm sure.
Of course.
I didn't eat at any of them. I haven't been there since, you know, whatever, probably 99 or so. And
right.
But it was the sort of thing where it was like, you get like some deli stuff and like fresh lettuce on a ciabatta thing. And I was like, we're not so different, you and I. Like maybe New Jersey and the UK could build cultural bridges around our love of chewy bread.
I remember one time I was a joint in England, and I was getting a sandwich, and the lady on the counter was like, you want salad? And I was like, no, I'm just
butter and salad. I remember being asked that. It blew my mind. You just say yes to stuff.
I was like, no, I just want a sandwich. And she's like, no, you want salad. And she's holding up the tongs with like the
on
little shreds
bread,
of lettuce.
On your bread, mate. On your bread.
Like, oh, Oh, you want me to put lettuce on the sandwich? Yeah. You're speaking a completely different language. Okay, fine. But like, yeah, English food, like I know it has the stereotype of like steak and kidney pie, spotted dick, and like all the like the all like the weird like
smack barm pee wet.
Yeah, like lips and assholes shit, like
yep.
That they serve at pubs and stuff like that. But like you go to London, like you're gonna find some of the best, like first of all, you're gonna find some of the best Indian food in the goddamn world. And that's like yeah. That's pretty much the only reason I'm gonna go. I'm like,
yeah, I was gonna say, so do you have is this gonna be a like a food trip? Are you guys gonna blow it out or
every like, trip we do is a food trip. Right. Like food's kind of the paramount thing. We're gonna go to the tower, and like my daughter wants to go thrifting because every girl her age wants to go thrifting. And
obviously respect. Good luck finding another Mark Sanchez jersey to buy me over there, by the way. If you do.
The 11-year-old wants to go to a comic book store. And I'm like, great. And like he found one in like Woking that he wants. I'm like, no, like there's 5 million fucking comic book stores in a major city. Just pick one.
Yep.
Because all he wants to do is like buy fucking keychains or whatever the fuck. I remember because we had an Airbnb in Paris and there was a comic book store with anime shit like a block away. And he's like, did you do this on purpose? And I was like, fuck no. I didn't know.
No, it's just a really big city with a lot of stuff in it. Actually.
So I was like, hey, what'd you love about Paris? And he's like, the comic book store. And I was like, yeah, that's what everybody fucking says.
The famous city of comics.
And also yep. I'm taking my, I wanted to go for the 15-year-old because he's a soccer nut. And he's a big Spurs fan, and there are no Spurs home games when we were going. And there was one, like, the day we leave, and he was like, Dad, can you just change the flight to a later day? And I was like, no, that's not, that is absolutely not how yeah, it works. Like,
so teaching you the wrong lesson about what to expect from life, if I
right,
do that.
But we're gonna tour the stadium. We're going to go to, it's the one below. It's not Premier League. It's whatever the one below it is. We're going to go to one of those games in London, mm-hmm. and that'll be.
The championship or something? I don't know.
Yeah. Because I took him to a PSG game in Paris that fucking rocked. Like, yeah, Mbappe sure won amazing. The game on pens, like, in stoppage time. And I bought him an Mbappe jersey, and I bought myself an Mbappe jersey.
Wow.
And they were so goddamn expensive. I cannot, like, I did not tell my wife how much they cost. She would just freak the fuck out. They were, like, 160 euros or something like that.
Jesus.
And they were well made.
For the kid size one? I guess that's you have to pay that premium for a non-Fanatics jersey experience
yeah,
at
yeah.
this point.
It wasn't Fanatics, but also like the 15-year-old is big. Like it's not we're out of the kiddie section
okay.
for shopping. He has to buy the regular shit. But like 2 weeks later, like when we get back to the States, he's like, Dad, can you sell this Mbappe jersey? And I'm like, motherfucker, I paid so much money for that, you piece of shit.
Why did he want to sell it?
Because he's not really like a PSG fan.
Okay.
It's like if you bought me a Titans jersey, I'd be like, ooh, a Titans jersey. But
like, when would you wear it? And under, right, I get that.
Yeah, like how, I mean, I like Derrick Henry, but like, let's not go nuts here or anything.
I had a weird London experience, right? Not a lived experience, more of a thing you can do at home type of experience. But I earlier this year, I got on a weird kick of watching like 80s Bob Hoskins movies. I think that like
Long Good Friday
rocks. Mona Fucking Lisa also
great,
rocks.
Great
Long
movie.
Good Friday, I think, is like the best film performance I've ever seen anyone give. Like I for the longest time, it was always Al Pacino in Dog Day Afternoon for me. I just think that's like the most charismatic that an actor could be. Hoskins is doing so fucking much in Long Good Friday. He's incredible.
Yeah.
And if you've seen it, you know that it ends with just a shot of him not saying anything that's sustained over like 60 or 90 seconds, just responding to the reality of his situation in that moment. And it is like, it's like the way that Toshirô Mifune acts, and I'm sure I said his name terribly wrong, in Kurosawa movies. Like, it's like expressionistic, fucking wild shit. But also 80s London is a crazy looking space because it was still unfinished and shitty. Yeah. And so part of the plot of that movie is that, you know, it's this gangster who's trying to go straight and he's going to be like developing all this real estate on the Thames in these like sort of, which I'm assuming now like that process has finished just as surely as it has in like Williamsburg. And then it's just like big glassy apartment buildings that nobody actually lives in. But
1,000%. Of course.
But the way that it looked, I was like, I mean, I know you can't like go there and see that shit now, But that was just like a vision of what a city might look like, you know, like a demonstrably modern Western city that I had never seen as a kid. Like, I remember New York being shitty when I was little. My parents would take us in to like go to a show or go to dinner or whatever. And I remember like how fucked up stuff looked. But it was in the same way that, like you said, like everything over there is 500 years older than everything here is. Yeah. It was the way, the level of like dilapidated, sort of like jarringly raccoon like ruled, like tumble down post-industrial space that they had in London was like an advanced level of decrepitude that I wanted to, you know, climb around in it and I don't know, fall through some rotting boards into a filthy body of water.
Well, also
don't do England's that for me though. You can't.
England's drunks are, they put our drunks to shame.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You, like, you will see some dire fucking drunks.
Weird and, body shapes, heirloom.
Like, every New York bar, like, every New York bar that we would go to, there would always be, like, two or three, like, guys who were way too old to be there. Mm-hmm. But they were there, like, 3 p.m., and they were already drunk and stuff like that. And they'd clear out at, like, 8 or something like that when all the 20-year-olds would come and, you know, try to fuck each other and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, a British pub is those guys... But it's the entire pub.
Right.
But,
and they never leave. They live there.
They never leave. And it's not like, it's not charming. It's not like, no, people no, are like, right. Norm. Like, it's not that. Like, it's like.
In order to get people to say Norm, you have to leave and then come back.
Yeah.
Like you can't. These guys don't do that.
And they're an off, like, they're in just dire shape. Like, they look like they're fucking dying. Like, they look like the opening shot of Trees Lounge.
Yes, yeah. See, that's, I think Trees Lounge, a film that stayed with me mostly because I think it clarifies an important distinction I think you learn in your 20s when you're going to bars, that like there's a difference between a dive and a dump. Like, right. Dives are fun. Like, dives are where I spent the first, whatever, I don't know, 15 years of not being in college.
Like, with a sawdust and like rat bones and shit.
Yeah,
like
but
that.
Like, dumps are like, it's just bad vibes in the way that, and not necessarily bad vibes in the sense that, like, obviously no one is going to get laid in there, or if they do, it's like the worst sexual experience of your life. Like, it is sort of like you are like wrecking your life or like fucking up a marriage by doing it. But there's also just a feeling that you get where it's like, it's not welcoming. It's for the people in there to like punish themselves or whatever it is they're punishing themselves for. Whereas a dive is everybody just kind of punishing each other mutually, like in an agreed upon sort of way.
Right.
We're not going to do it because we have to consider that people are listening to this. But you and I having
what?
Lived
no, we should keep talking about
more or less in the same neighborhood.
This is what people like.
There were some dumps up here. There's one that has like basically attempted, and I think seemingly successfully near me, to reimagine itself as a dive after being so definitively a dump that I never actually went into it. There's a bar on
what is
First
the
Avenue.
Name of it?
Phil Hughes, like the pitcher that used to pitch
like
for the Yankees
pitcher?
And the Twins. Yes, it's just called Phil Hughes. Not Phil
is it named after Phil Hughes?
No. I have always been curious about that, but it's much older. I did look that up. And it's not called like Phil Hughes's or like Phil Hughes's bar. It is just Phil Hughes, like a name of a guy. Huh. And it was the only comparison that, and I make this comparison a lot to desolate spaces, but before, so they, one of the moves that they made to make it more appealing to people who were not already dead was that they got a window put in, and it has a window now. For the longest time, it did not have a window. It just had those little opaque glass blocks like that you see sometimes in industrial architecture. And then otherwise, it was completely dark. The door was open, so you could see inside to see like the embalmed men slumped on their stools. There was simulcast horse racing on.
Ooh, that's always a bad sign.
Yeah, not what you want. And it reminded me of... More than any bar, like, do you remember like the Unforgiven video, the Metallica video?
Of course.
It's like the old guys like scratching through a stone for their entire lives. Yeah. So that was the vibe in there. But now they've got like bigger TVs. Yeah. They show NFL games and they built an outdoor space during COVID. And it's like now there's people in there that are alive. Instead
I bet
just
the dead people hate the alive.
I think they do. That's the thing that I kind of want to go in there. But I'm sure the one thing that they would hate more than anything else is like some interloper coming in and being like, what do you think about all the Bills fans that come here now?
It's like I did a book reading in Austin this ages ago. I think it was for Postmortal or something. And it was in a bar, it was in the back of the bar, and there were two Cowboys playing pool, and they were not happy that there was like a bunch of fucking dipshit 30-year-olds doing a book reading. One of them was like, Saint in the damn library. So I'm gonna tell you two stories about New York bars. One is,
we don't cotton to book stuff around here.
Before I met my wife, my best friend Howard and I, we were like, well, we have to find our Cheers. It was like, we have to find our regular bar. And we found a place on the Upper East Side called Rife's, which I
was
going to
say
there.
That's the other place that I think of as the dump up here. It's still open, you know.
That's great, because Rife's, because the bartender was nice to us. His name was Hank. I don't know if he's still there. And he would tell us stories about like when he tended bar with like Jennifer Aniston as a waitress, and Bruce Willis was like the other bartender. He was like, Bruce is a prick and Jennifer was super nice. And he had a VHS tape of the first Triumph the Insult comic dog sketch where he was at Westminster,
He
would play it to the entire bar. And it was the funniest thing that we had ever seen.
Also, it's really great that's how this shit used to work. This is real old guy hours. But videos like that, like if you wanted to see it after it was on, that's what you needed to do.
Yeah. Or it was like how, you know, it was how South Park started. You know, the legend of the original South Park cartoon that got passed around as a tape around Hollywood. But anyway, so, and they had a grill in the back. And so we would go to the Key Food across the street and we would grill our food. And I'm sure that's not legal. I'm sure that violates a million health codes. But we were like, oh my God, we can just be out here. And then one day we went and like Hank wasn't there. And like we were in the pool room and like I sparked up a joint. And like the bartender was like, well, you better not be doing that in here. And I was like, I guess this isn't our Cheers anymore.
Yeah.
So then the other story I have is when I met my wife, I was drunk. She was drunk too.
Nice.
We were at a bar called Dakota, which no longer exists. I was taking a piss, came out of the bathroom. There she was. And then I asked her name, and her name's Armenian. So I had to ask her like five different times. I had to ask her like five times before I could get it right. And then while I'll be starting, something came on. And everybody in the bar broke into Mama Say, Mama Sana, Mama Musa, Mama Say, Mama Sana, Mama Musa. And we were like having a good time. And then she was like, hey, we're all going to Dorian's. So do you want to meet us at Dorian's? I was like, yes, of course, because I had always gone to Dorian's. That was my go-to bar. And for people who don't know, Dorian's is the place where Robert Chambers.
The preppy murder. If you're familiar with the preppy murder.
Yes. From the 1980s, a preppy guy named Robert Chambers met a woman at Dorian's. Took her into Central Park and was accused of killing her in Central Park. And I think he went to jail for it. He might still be in jail for it. I don't fucking know. But Dorian's was sort of infamous for that.
It's still open. That's also still open, but it's just like a shitty like Commander's bar now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a Durs bar. And it is also, it's like the way that I think of it, because that's hardcore in my neighborhood, is that I think of it as a place where there's like meetups for like Colonial Athletic Conference or like MAC teams. Like if like there's always like a bunch of like Fairfield or Marist alums coming out of there like loaded at like 3:45 in the afternoon. And I, you know, that's cool. That's a type of bar to be. It is just sort of like all right. So we've now established the identity. Preppy murder, Marist guys.
So my whole thing about Dorian's was that I knew the bouncer. And by no, I mean like one time I slipped him $10. So I could cut the line and get in. And then I was like, that's my guy. He's my guy. And so like a couple of other times he would like, there'd be a line. And he'd be like, here, I'll let you know in the side entrance. So like me and Howard would be like, we're VIPs getting in and all that stuff.
This is just like Goodfellas. This is so much like Goodfellas.
And I was like, you're my guy. My guy, Ray. I love you, Big Ray. He's my guy. And like, we're friends. He's my friend. Of course, I'm just some asshole, right? Yeah. And he got sick. Much, much later, like after I'd moved to DC, and there was a GoFundMe, and so like we contributed to it. This does not end in a Dave McKenna way. This is not
all
end
right.
With
good,
him dying.
Yeah.
And I got
my buddy Big Red's all fucked
no,
up.
No, and I got an Instagram link from my wife the other day that had the old bouncer at the entrance of Dorian's, like checking IDs. And I was like, good for him. But also, like, I wish he was like running a bank now or something like
yeah.
that, you know?
Well, I mean, it's a different sort of thing. I think that like,
but he was alive and he's alive and happy. And I was super happy about
it. Yeah. And it's not like a scary job to have. Like at some point you're just going to have to tell someone to calm down about Sam Howell. That's like the extent of his.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It wasn't like, and like there has not, to my knowledge, no one has been murdered after walking out of there recently.
Oh God, it's been almost 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I killed a few people, but
right. That's, well, I don't, yeah, we don't need to. This is being recorded. Wow. So that was, is that the first half of our podcast? you didn't give me any answers on what you're trying to eat in London. You want to run that down real quick?
Oh, Indian food was top. And then, my wife wanted to go to Wagamama, even though Wagamama, like Wagamama was huge when I was there in 1997.
Mm-hmm. We have one here. There's someone in
New York. Now like 5 million of them. Like we went to Boston last spring break. It was in fucking Boston. Like, you know, it's around. But anyway,
it's one of those things where like people want to get a Guinness closer to the source. You know, that like if it started there, it's like, it's going to be so much crisper.
Well, that's the other thing is like my daughter does want to like have a fancy cocktail. And I said, you know, get her a cask pulled pint. And I had to like ready her for cask pints because I was like, they're not ice cold. Like, in America, we are weird to the rest of Europe because we like ice cold beer. In England, like it's cask temperature, so it's like in the 50s. She's like, ah. Oh. And I told the 15-year-old, I was like, you can have one too. But like he's a picky eater, so like he's probably going to say no. And then the other thing was that because I was late to planning, we actually have a layover in Amsterdam that's so long we had to get another Airbnb.
That's like a nice problem to have though.
It's kind of a nice problem, but like the one I found was like 2 miles outside of the city center. And like we landed like 8 p.m. and all this weird shit. And I said to my daughter, like, I'll take you to a hash bar if I can. And she's like, okay. And like, but I think we're going to be in like the fucking Rockville of Amsterdam. I don't know what the hell is going to be. There's probably going to be like a Potbelly.
Yeah, that honestly, that seems all right though. Like that's sort of a different type of experience than you would ordinarily have there. And I imagine that, you know, if you want to, I don't think you're trying to scare your daughter straight or away from the weed or whatever, but the idea of taking her to
it's
suburban
way too late
Netherlands pot bar is sort of like, this is it. This is what being an adult is like.
I tell you, my wife found her weed stash.
Nice.
And I was like, she came home and I was like, oh, mom found your weed stash. And she's like, there's nothing in there. I smoked it all. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, then we found the traces of your weed stash. And then she's like, yeah, I got it from a bug. And I was like, bug? And apparently that's slang for drug dealer now. Like I'm learning all these new tween terms.
Okay.
And so like now I have to give her the lecture about like, make sure you only get good shit.
You have to sternly sit her down and be like, you smoke good, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. You smoke that loud, right?
Fire?
I have to make sure like it's not the shit that's laced with like PCP. Because I had a friend who had some lace shit in Mexico and it fucked him up for like a week.
Wow.
And I really don't want that to happen to one of my kids.
Yeah, in some ways, I would rather my kid get from a trusted dealer than go to like one of the weed bodegas in my neighborhood and just like try your luck
with that stuff. The accidental spice. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That. Just being like, I don't know. What is this going to do? Like, is there a chance that this turns me into like one of the 28 days later guys? And the person working behind the counter is like, I don't know, man.
Let's take a break. Before we do, did you forget to get your NCAA bracket in on time? Well, Bareback Sportsbook has you covered with our Booty Call Parlay. Pick 4 winners out of the Sweet 16 matchups, and you'll not only win $1,000, but we'll also re-enter your original full bracket into our Gang Thang pool with all 68 teams. So lube up your picks and stick them in now.
Oh my God.
Bareback Sportsbook. We'll be right back.
It's in the bag.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' Cold Coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's Cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
And we're back with our Spring Break podcast. Hi, David Roth. By the way,
hey, man.
One more English note. I had to write about Guy Ritchie and how much I love him because I had just watched the Netflix series, The Gentlemen, and it fucking rocked. It was so much fun. Yep. And I was like, fuck, I got to tell everybody that Guy Ritchie's my favorite director. And everyone's going to shit on me for it. But that's not what happened, Roth. Turns out
people our really readership like
and people on social media were quite chuffed. They too were guys.
Yeah, so you got a resounding in it from the commentariat, which is he's always what
fucking,
you want to see.
He's a brilliant fucking director. Anyway, time to open the fun bag. These are real questions from defector readers and distraction listeners. Let's see how well this question will age from Dennis. If Shohei gets deported for federal wire fraud, but doesn't get Pete Rose to have baseball entirely, is it worth the roster spot for the Blue Jays to hire him to only play home games? Perhaps they'd have to build a spring training facility in the Bahamas. There's a lot of moving parts to that, none of which will really be proven true.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, we are only at the beginning of Ohtani Gate.
We haven't yet gotten to the part where he's strategically reincorporating on the Isle of Man or whatever.
We haven't done that. And if I had to guess, nothing will happen.
I think nothing's going to happen.
I think nothing will happen.
So that this was, I'm glad we're getting to talk about it a little bit, however silly it is, because this happened like more or less immediately after we got done recording with Ken Pomeroy for last week's episode. And it was like, you know, I wouldn't change a thing. Like it was the first day of the NCAA tournament. That's what you got to talk about. But this is... And this is something that, you know, we've talked about it, trying to figure out how to cover it. I think in general, we've covered it very well at Defector. But Barry pointed out just in passing that this is a fucking great scandal. It rocks. It is. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of dumb shit. There's a lot of like silly behavior. And also it is like pretty low consequence. Like it's not the sort of thing. It's not. Like, there's been a lot of, like, scandally type stuff in baseball, but, like, Trevor Bauer, like, I don't want to talk about that shit. He's disgusting. No. Like, he's a pig. You know, like, whereas in this case, it's like, this is a burn after reading level scenario.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, especially, we're still, in, as we record this, I think it's going to continue to emerge on a very long timeline because it's a federal investigation and that stuff. Say what you will about the feds. They do not rush. On stuff like this.
They don't fuck around either.
Yeah. And so I think that this, it remains to be seen just what kind of a goober this poor interpreter was. But right now he's like already in that pantheon of like dirtbag baseball hanger-on idiots. Like the cop that used to like inject Roger Clemens in the ass at Yankee games and like sell him steroids. Like Ipe is already up there with that guy as far as I'm concerned.
Or the fucking the ball boy for the Patriots or who,
like, yeah,
who
yes.
deflate the balls or
yeah,
the
just the like, his name was like literally Murph or something too. Like it was one of those things where like it was like a thousand collective B minus jokes willed that man into being.
My buddy Murph. Yeah, that's right. It is a great scandal because the people in position to, you know, pass judgment and render punishment are somehow far less trustworthy than the potential offenders here. Right?
Yes.
Like, I'm going to rely on fucking Rob Manfred to, like, handle this shit. Get the fuck out of here.
Or, I mean, even the Dodgers, too, this is the one thing that people have, I think, had the hardest time understanding is like, how could this be so poorly managed when they invested literally $700 million in Shohei Ohtani this offseason? And they're the fucking Dodgers. It's not even the, like he's the guy they're paying the most, but they got two other guys that they're paying in the hundreds of millions of dollars that have recently won MVPs. Like, this is the blue chip organization in baseball.
Yeah, they're the not Angels. They're right. Supposed to have their shit together.
But they're also dumb in the way that baseball teams are dumb. Like, there's stories, this was like 2018, there was a bunch of stories about the Dodgers like keeping tabs on all of the different crimes that their minor league players had committed that they knew about, which they knew about. And the way that they stored this information that later came out, this was part of an investigation, they didn't wind up, you know, suffering anything from it because, again, the Manfred level, you know, you're not going to punish them.
Nope.
But they had it in a spreadsheet, the title of which was crimes.xls.
Wow.
They are just
the,
like...
The Connor Stallions way. Very,
it really is.
Very impressive.
But they're like... absolutely dumb enough to have duffed it in the way. Because right now, the story as we record this is this was like, Ippei was fairly close to getting away with it before the owner blundered in and was like, and Shohei paid off his debts. Isn't that great? Isn't that great, Shohei, that you did that for your friend? And that was like somehow the first that Ohtani had ever heard of any of this.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Like, which is, so the idea that there's somehow this super operatic baseball scandal, like the shape and size of it is big. Beat by beat, though, it is a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. I just think that rocks. I love it.
Yeah, I do. I like petty scandals too. They're my favorite kind. This is Tim. He writes in, on a recent distraction, you discussed the trope of you can't park there, leave it, whether anyone actually does that. All of you determined that for many reasons that trope is out of time and no one does it. But Daryl Morey does this and has admitted it on the record multiple times as something he does with rental cars when he's in a rush. Where does too efficient to return the rental car to the right place at the airport rank in the history of technocratic asshole behavior that is lauded as hidden genius? I did not know that Daryl Morey just fucking leaves rental cars where they are.
I don't think I did either, like, although that definitely sounds like him, because this is a good question too, because it points back to the way that, like, everything that I've read about Morey, there's always some bit of it where it's like, he figured out that you don't actually need to, like, pay your security deposit when you're renting an apartment. It's just like some, like, basic social fundamental agreement that he's like, actually, that's optional for me. I don't have to do that.
I actually found the story, Roth.
Hell
so
yeah.
I can give you the specifics. So this,
lay it
I
on me.
This is from Kevin O'Connor, not Kevin O'Connell. Kevin O'Connor at The Ringer, the little fucking Boy Scout basketball shithead that The Ringer has. So he profiled Morey. And the copy was like, the time Morey was late for a flight and parked his rental car at the terminal and then tossed his keys to the baggage guy and gave him $50 to bring the car back to Hertz.
He literally did the keep it thing.
Or the time he was driving to the NCAA tournament in a frenzy to catch a tip-off and created his own left lane to beat the traffic. I believe that's known as driving on the shoulder, right?
Yeah, that's not allowed.
Or another time when he had to rush to the airport, so he called the team travel attendant to let them know he had let his bag back at the hotel. The attendant arrived and got the bellhop to let them in. Morey's bag was in the room, so were his clothes and toiletries scattered across the counters and floor. One of the multiple former colleagues who relayed the latter story remarked, typical Daryl fashion. What's the most efficient? Yes, how efficient to leave all your shit in a hotel room and then leave the hotel room and then get a fucking lackey to go get it for you.
That is also, it rules that it's Kevin O'Connor doing this, like the most like Elon positive guy in basketball media, being like, you know, I mean, but I don't know anything about his writing really, so I don't know that he writes like this necessarily, but the
he
idea
can eat my ass.
Of it being like, you know, it's, if you think about it, like, sociopathy is the most efficient way to navigate human behavior. That, like, if you're in a, like, say you're using a public bathroom and you're in a rush and you want to get back on the road, why waste the time that you spend flushing the toilet after taking a big poop in it when you could be using that time to get back on the road and get ahead of your competition, right?
I'm quite astounded at someone having the gall to try to pay off a curbside check guy $50 to go bring a rental car back for me. Like,
yep.
I would I'd be far too embarrassed to ever do that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was just like, I can't even imagine, like, the look I would get doing that. Like,
and who, does,
the,
and to who know the that
fuck
you're
do you
right,
think you are, right?
That you're right to get it, too. Like, the idea, it's like basically handing someone a bag of something disgusting. Like, just being like, can you get rid of this for me? I'm important. I have to fly to Indianapolis because the basketball team I work for is about to go play there.
Yeah. I'm floored. That is such.
I mean, I guess that this is like, so to the extent that I have an opinion on this beyond that Daryl Morey needs to fucking tighten it up and refine his processes so that he is less of a sociopath. Something about this involving cars really resonates to me. I think that there's something that makes people crazy where cars are concerned, and also ditto hotels. I mean, it's the idea of like just leaving all your shit in your room and being like, someone will take care of that for me, or just leaving a car by the curb. I remember this is for whatever reason, the really bright example for me, and it's not a significant thing at all, but early days of the Trump administration, like all these fucking like goobers that didn't think that they were going to be there suddenly right. had like the government jobs of their dreams. Like they were so close to the thing that all the people that worked for Trump wanted, which is the only thing they ever really wanted, which is the opportunity to fly private. Right. And it was the Sebastian Gorka, very briefly worked
Gorka
in the White House. You remember Gorka, the booming Hungarian, like just being like goulash, wearing medals from some like fucking like Nazi knighthood.
Super low pad level too. Really, really.
Yes,
good.
That's true. Like you got to give him credit where it's due. He used to just park his car like on the sidewalk in D.C. Like wherever he was going.
Like
he
fucking had, like, Homer Simpson.
Yeah, and it was. And the idea of it, I think that there were times where people were like, that's not a parking spot. And you'd be like, I'm Sebastian Gorka. I work for the White House.
Diplomatic immunity.
Right. It's exactly the energy. He was like a less charismatic Joss Ackland, RIP to the legend. And that, to me, I was just like, well, who would fucking do that? Like, even by, like, you'd hear stories out of D.C. during the Trump years where it was just like, these people were exactly what you think they were. That there'd be stories. Mo Kochik wrote a story about what it was like to be a fine dining server in D.C. during that period. And she talked about being at a really fancy restaurant and just getting some, like a guy that was there that worked for the Pentagon, leaving zero tip and writing, my service is my gratuity, in that line.
Was that Trump? That sounds like something Trump.
No, I mean, honestly, it does sound like Trump. Like, I'm sure that Trump is either like a lazy good tipper or an extraordinarily bad one.
The thrill of being able to wait tables on me really is.
What an amazing honor.
Yeah.
Think about all the lessons about success that you learned watching me eat a steak cooked to the consistency of a fucking Reebok. But yeah, like that level of entitlement to me is, I don't know if it necessarily begins with cars, but it definitely enfolds cars.
Well, the thing is that everyone's an asshole when they're driving, right? And so
yes.
You have to really go above and beyond to be a cock when it comes to how you handle automobiles.
Right. Like notably.
So, like we all know how shitty New York cops are about it, but like we were going back to Maury and Tech Bros about it. And of course the OG for all this was Steve Jobs, who never ever got a license plate for his car and always parked in handicap spots.
He never got a license plate?
No, he was both too lazy and too arrogant to do it. Like he didn't have time or something like that.
Oh my God.
Well, I think there is a stratum of person who believes that they are too important and too busy for sort of the basic red tape of living, right? Like returning a rental car. That's just basic shit you do.
That's
right?
Like we live in a society level shit. Like that is just like basic social compact stuff.
But also like if I don't return a rental car, I'd be fucking terrified. Like I would be scared of like owing them like $100,000 and like Avis puts me in jail and like prints out like fucking like my headshot and like pastes it on the wall of like every airport. Like don't rent a car to this man.
Like, especially they were doing shit like that. They were making mistakes and accusing people that rented cars of having stolen them. That was, I think it was Budget was doing that.
Yeah.
It was like really bad.
Yeah. I don't want any of that smoke. So I'm like, and also I'm someone who had, when it was my first job It was a DDB Needham in New York, and I had to rent a car, and I double parked it on the sidewalk to run up and get my boss to drive to Hershey. When we came back down, the car was gone. It had been towed to the fucking the impound dock in Manhattan,
right. 14th Avenue or whatever, just like the furthest west.
And we've done a lot of New York Arcana here, and I can't really get into how awful that place is. But anyway, the point being, when you've had your rental car towed, it stays with you for forever. It does not leave you.
It's like a legit scared street moment.
I could be 90 years old. I would remember that moment like it was fucking yesterday. So like the idea that you're fucking around with rental cars or the DMV or cops, because like, I mean, a cop sees you fucking in a handicapped spot with no license plate. It's like fucking Christmas for a cop. He's going to fucking key it.
Well, that's like also it's their dream because it's like a chance to punish somebody. Obviously, they kind of like that. Also, it's very easy. Like not having a license plate is extremely not allowed. You can get away with a lot of not allowed stuff driving a car around like in America in 2024. But that's like one that everybody sort of agreed on. Like you should your car should be identifiable.
My wife actually would dispute you on this because one time we went on spring break to L.A., it was a really good time. But she was like. She was appalled at the number of cars on the freeway, like on the 5 that didn't have proper license plates. She was like, how are they getting away with this? And there was some weird California reason that a lot of cars don't have plates or something like that. But to this day, this was fucking like 2018. This was a long time ago, right? But today she's like if I bring it up, she'll still make like the face. She's like,
Yeah, I mean, I'm like that with some car shit here too. For a while, it was with the temporary plates that people were using to get around that. And like, I turn into both Statler and Waldorf, like Master Blaster style levels of curmudgeonlyhood talking about it. But yeah, I respect that. She's just like, all these years later, it's like, you know, they don't have license plates out there.
She was very, very pissed about it. And I was
Can I tell you the one, this is, you know more about Steve Jobs because you actually read that book. A funny Steve Jobs thing that I learned earlier this week that's been kicking around my head. Do you know what his daughter's name is?
Like the daughter that he acknowledged or the daughter that he fucking treated?
No, not the one that he considered off-brand and ignored.
Okay. Right. Like, well, that's my Samsung Galaxy child. No, I don't remember the name of the one he had with Loreen.
So it's not as funny as him just parking in handicapped spots because he's that important. But his daughter's name is Eve Jobs, which I think is
Oh, because of Apple, like Adam and Eve?
I guess. I always thought it was just the sort of thing where he was like, Steve Jobs. What a great name. What's a girl version of that? Eve Jobs.
No, I mean, that's not like George Foreman naming all of his kids George.
Kids George? All right, well, maybe.
Or like Dion naming his kid like Deandra. And I'm not seeing that as like, I'm much more interested in him fucking with cars and also smelling really bad.
Yeah.
And then
really
also
refusing to treat his own terminal illness.
Yeah. Yeah. Dying 20, 30 years too early when he absolutely did not have to.
Because he had some vegan super cure that he had made up himself.
And also he was a cock to waiters too.
Yeah. Oh, really? That fits. Though.
Yeah. And like, that's another one where it's like, if you're a dick to waiters, come on, man.
Everything else is academic after that. Like if you can, I think that this is like a bigger, we've obviously gone further and longer on this question than anybody intended, but that is like, there's a number of things where it's like, if I see you behaving in that way, there's no one that would act the way that Daryl Morey acts, like just dropping a fucking rental car wherever and giving someone $20 and being like, fix this shit for me.
Right.
Like everything else is academic after that. Like that's not a person that you can trust or that you'd want to do business with or whatever. Like they might be good at doing their job, but they are fundamentally like some parts are missing that will make them complete or not. Ditto for like if you're a shithead to waiters, like if you can't be bothered to not be an asshole in that situation, then like I don't care what you're like when you're trying to suck up to somebody that you think can get you something or whatever. Like I already know something fundamental about who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I don't think you have to – like I worked in the service industry for a while, but you don't have to have worked in the service industry. Like
– Yeah.
Like you can just know like someone's bringing you your food like – Maybe it's the first day. Maybe they suck or something like that. But like, Just fucking deal, man.
Also, just from a practical standpoint, it's like they're bringing you your food. You don't know what they're doing with it until you see them with it. Like, be nice.
Yep.
If that's all it takes to keep you behaving, then behave.
I absolutely concur. This is from Luke. We'll do this. Will be the last question. We have high end almost everything, but do we have high end cottage cheese? Roth, have you ever seen artisanal cottage cheese sold anywhere where cottage cheese is sold?
It wouldn't be sold as cottage cheese, though, right? There'd be a new...
Like it would be called like artisanal curd.
Yes, yeah. And I think in that case, there might be... Cottage cheese is one of those things that it's like... I feel like that's like a what the 70s and 80s kind of tasted like. That was everybody's idea of like... Because they were still in coming up with new food products.
That was the Nixon meal. Like he would have dinner. He would have cottage cheese with like a fucking canned peach sitting in the middle of it.
Yep. Oh, terrific. What an amazing...
By the way, when we're talking about Nixon, I have to tell you, I've never, it's always batting around in my brain, but I always think by far the weirdest thing about Richard Nixon is that his pet name for his wife was Buddy. I think that's so fucking weird.
It is really weird. And
like,
if
I called my wife Sparky or something like that, like what the fuck? Like,
pal.
I'm not a dog. Like,
yeah.
And like, and it's in the Oliver Stone movie. Like,
Anthony Hopkins be like, Buddy. Like
Anthony Hopkins like goes to Joan Allen. He's like, that's just what they want, buddy. And I'm like, that's your wife. What the fuck
that's
wrong
Joan
with
Allen,
you?
Sir.
Yeah, it's not Joan your Allen, too.
Show a little respect.
An elegant woman. Just awful. But anyway.
Yeah, that.
But cottage cheese, that's a sad meal. And I will tell you that I have purchased, I don't know if it's high-end cottage cheese, but like, you know, when you go to Whole Foods and I'm already I've painted myself to gore. You know, like when you get a Whole Foods and down have caviar. But like if you go to Whole Foods.
What Dennis Leary routines would be like now, where he's like, so you're waiting in line, right? But all these people are trying to pay with their Amazon Prime accounts.
But like if you go to Whole Foods, like the normal food that you buy at a normal supermarket, like if you're like, oh, I want some peanut butter. Oh, where's the Skippy? Where's the Jif? They don't have that.
Yep.
They have like, they have either their house brand or they have like Mitch's, like, or something like that. And it's the same with the cottage cheese. Like there isn't like Breakstones.
Dr. Bronner brand.
Yeah,
somehow.
Yeah, shit like that. So they, but there was this cottage cheese they had. And I don't know. It's like, you know, it's obviously twice the price of regular ass cottage cheese. But what always threw me was that it came in a paper carton, which like, hooray, environment and all that stuff. But man, this is wet ass cottage cheese.
Yeah.
I don't trust you to put it in a goddamn coffee cup and sell it to me. Like I need a bit more reinforcement. I'm not trusting that shit, man.
Especially with something like that, where it's like, I'm not buying this because I want to buy it. Right? Like this is not like an ethical thing to me. Like this is either I was prescribed cottage cheese or I'm afraid of other foods or there's some thing that's happening. Like, let's just make this experience as painless for both of us as possible. Do not give me anything that's going to get cheese water on the interior of my car.
That's my wife. She's always buying cottage cheese and she's like, okay, I bought cottage cheese so we can make cottage cheese pancakes. And I keep telling her, I'm like, honey, no one wants to eat that shit except you. And she's like, well, you haven't made them yet. I was like, we've made them. They don't like them. Nobody fucking
what is cottage
them.
Cheese pancakes? What is they're, what is
they're good.
Being
it's
substituted?
Like, it's like cottage cheese and like a shitload of eggs and like some flour. It's like it's kind of just a rich sort of fluffy, crepey pancake. It's pretty good. But like my kids were like, why are we eating these? Why don't you just make regular fucking pancakes? And I don't have a good answer for that.
Like, your mom got there's a box of wet cheese in the fridge,
mm-hmm.
earmarked for this purpose.
Yep.
I will tell you one last thing, because I know we do have to end. Plus wanting each other's jokes. I went to a place in Palm Springs and I was there with my wife for a little vacation before she started her job. This is back in November. We had a good time. There was a place that I was fascinated by. We walked most places, which is not something you're supposed to do there.
No, is not a pedestrian friendly city.
No, not really. But you know, we're stupid. So we did that and you know, we had a car too, but it was like, if we could do it, we would walk. There was a place that was, seemingly windowless. It was called Billy Reed's that it looked like it was like TGI Fridays before TGI Fridays. Like it was like an OG Fern Bar from the 70s type experience.
Okay.
Huge menu specializing in baked potatoes.
Ooh.
And the place itself, once you got in there, it was like both very much like a the sort of restaurant, I'm sure that you went there with your family in like the 70s and 80s, like a Charlie Brown's or like or Applebee's type, the places that would become that.
Like back when like TGI Fridays was like cool, right?
Yes.
Like, oh, so it was like, oh, this is a nice restaurant.
Yeah. Big bar, a lot of tables, a lot of booths, like
Bennigan's
a salad bar.
Type shit.
Yes, yeah, exactly that.
Okay, all right,
and,
all right.
But this one was kind of like windowless, and it was like if a TGI Fridays could have like a David Lynchian energy to it. It was one of the weirdest places that I have been. And my wife got something called the Caesar potato. It's a special of the house. It was a baked potato with toppings and a Caesar salad on the side.
Oh, so the Caesar salad wasn't on the potato?
No, it was not. It was next to the potato.
Kind of
I got a tuna melt. Both of them were quite good. Like, it was just a weird place. We had a nice time. But I remember I posted something about it, and all my sort of Southern California friends were hip to it, were fascinated by the place. And I remember my friend Aaron.
I thought they were going to tell you, like, oh, you don't know about the murders that happened there?
I mean, honestly, like, I thought that was going to be the case. All they said was that, like, the founder, he's, like, still there, and some days he shows up, and he's just been facelifted until he looks like Rob Lowe and Behind the Candelabra, and it's just berating everybody. So, like, we were not there on a Billy day, sadly.
That's very sad.
Yeah. Well, whatever. I mean, he's having fun. But my friend Aaron's message about it was just saying, what a plate of cottage cheese that place makes. And that's, which is a beautiful sentence, but great. Also is like, that's where people are getting cottage cheese now, is at like your leftover Time Warp, Billy Reid ass, like TGI Friday, like proto TGI Friday places. I hope they're still, I hope that those places never close and that our America's cottage cheese aficionados can always find a place to get it.
I'm excited to have my cottage cheese chips from the kebab van.
That's right.
Very excited.
Kebab.
Eric Silver is our corking producer. Brandon Grugel is our editor. Our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. Oh. Ads and production services by Multitude. And you can subscribe to Defector.com right now. Just go to Defector and hit that subscribe button. You can also email us at distractiondefector.com or even call us at 909-726-3720 and leave a message. That's 909-PANERA-0. Have a lovely spring break, and we will see you again next week.
Bye. Have fun out there.